We're going to continue our conversation with Craig Hewlett by Oh My, and we'll take your phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Craig Hewlett with us. We'll get to your calls in a second. Craig, so next 5 years are going to be pretty fascinating years, aren't they?
Well, if we take the assumption, which I think has now been proven more valid than ever, that there is an oligarchy, we need to accept that they view us with a certain disdain. The people who have witnessed some of these fraternal groups partying, making fun of Main Street, the homeless.
It's all true. All true to them.
It does hold true. I think they do. So I think we can anticipate that their thinking in the next 5 years, particularly over the next 3 years with Obama, but a fundamental shift during the next election. After the next election, there's going to be a fundamental shift. It's going to begin over the next 3 years, but they're not going to do anything really drastic in the next 3 years. But I think they're going to set the stage for the finish, the final. As one of my clients, when he discovered Eric Holder and Obama, were suggesting that marijuana be made legal nationwide, he emailed me and said, could this possibly be the final solution? Now, he's a young man that has seen what drugs and alcohol has done to the young generation in this country. 21% of 18 to 30-year-old adult males live at home with their mothers. They don't work. They smoke dope all day. They stay drunk. They party. And they don't even try to get a job. 100 million American adults are permanently unemployed and considered unemployable. That's a third of the adult population in this country. So given that the oligarchy does, in fact, view us with considerable disdain, and I found it fascinating that Ralph Nader would actually suggest that some of those very people would join together and save us as a democracy. I've never heard anything so spurious and absurd coming out of Ralph Nader's mouth. It's shameful. But I can see where they're going to make sure that we have things that, in my opinion, don't matter. I deal with issues that matter. How many times has everybody heard me say this? But the things that don't matter, I think, will be given to the American people. Sex rights, the right to
everything. They want the diversion, the great diversion.
And even possibly a guaranteed annual income. Obamacare is borderline putting us in a stage. If they're going to give us this and force this upon us, why not give them a guarantee? Bush Sr. actually suggested it once during a crisis during his administration. He looked around at everybody at the White House and he said, well, why don't we just write them all a check for $300?
Well, you know, I thought during the 2008 financial crisis, I thought that a better plan would have been, rather than try to stimulate and save the banks and these corporations with billions of dollars, trillions, let's give every American taxpayer a check for $100,000 and tell them to buy goods and services in the U.S.
But that's because you care about the people.
Yeah.
The oligarchy took care of their own. When Hank Paulson pulls these 15 bankers together at the Fed and said, look, we're going to give you $1 trillion, okay? We're going to bail out the banks. Now, you guys are going to loan the money back, right? And I thought, if you don't put it into the law that requires them to loan the money bank back to the domestic economy, why would they do it? They're bankers. Think about it. They're bankers, for heaven's sakes. Banking in itself is a Ponzi scheme and a criminal enterprise. In the Middle Ages, if you're a banker, there were signs up in villages. If the banker enters this village, we will draw and quarter you.
Well, here's an example, Craig. Take a check into your bank and make a deposit. It's quick. You'll be in and out in a few minutes, assuming there's no line. Now go right back in and try to take that out in cash after you put it in your account. It's like, you know, you're pulling teeth.
Go in and ask for a loan for $1,000 and you've got collateral, but say, I want the loan in cash.
They won't do it.
They will not do it because it's their money. And cash is a debt instrument. That's why it's called a note, not a dollar. It's called a note. And the banks own it. So you know, let's get over the what-ifs. There's a lot of what-ifs, and I don't do what-ifs. I think I know and understand what they're going to do to this country with sex rights, drug usage, guaranteed annual income, bread and circuses, because this will tend to end any revolutionary tendency should the masses suddenly discover that they've been enslaved. If they were to discover what you and I are talking about tonight, the masses, on a large scale, they would revolt. And the only thing every government in the world for 6,000 years of history is afraid of is their subjects. They're not afraid of wars. They're not afraid of coup d'etats. They're not even afraid of economic collapse because it won't collapse on them. They're afraid of you and I.
Yes, they are. They sure are. If they're hearing this program right now, they got to be cringing. Cringing, don't you think?
Well, I'll give you an example. Henry Kissinger was on a Concorde flight to Europe, and Michael J. Fox got out of his seat in first class and went back and knelt down next to Henry Kissinger and said, "I just want to tell you how much I admire what you've done." And Henry Kissinger looked at him and said, "I don't know who you are."
I love it. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Sherry in Kerrville, Texas, to get things going. Hello, Sherry. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Mr. Hewlett. I am a Coast Insider for over a year.
Well, thank you. Glad you're part of it.
It is. It's just wonderful to listen to all the past podcasts that you've had. Mr. Hewlett, you had mentioned something about the corporatism and how we need to figure out a way to take the country back. And I was wondering, if, regarding the Bundy dispute, there is a BLM mitigation study that surrounds this project, the solar energy project that they have. And I have been reading on it, and this mitigation study, it talks about all the environmental losses, about animals and plants, but the very interesting thing is they actually looked at the cultural and historical disruptions and interferences regarding the use and dependency of the land by humans. But what they were referring to were only Native Americans. Now, they had a result table, and each component had a no. And the study said no amending is needed on any one component, except I believe the whole study needs amending because they need to include an endangered species now on the brink of complete extinction.
The human race.
And the humans.
No, it's the Western American rancher. And I said,
that too.
Why don't they include the non-Native Americans in the study?
Well, first of all, the reason Native Americans are named is because Native Americans are, in fact, a separate nation state within America based on treaty. And Native Americans tend to get together, for instance, like they're doing with the Keystone Pipeline. Native Americans are collectively joining forces as tribal units and saying, not through our land. And they're the only ones that can actually do that. If you try to do it, for instance, the domestic population of Washington State tries to do it, will fail. But the tribes won't. Now, I'm not saying the tribes will successfully stop Keystone. What they'll get is they'll get a huge paycheck at the end of the day to give in. But they're the only thing that is part of the interfering with the federal government is because they are tribal and a nation state unto themselves. That isn't really even relevant, though. The truth is, look, we're going to lose this fight in the short term. I've already accepted that we're going to lose it.
And we already have, I think.
And yeah, if you want to be really honest, and I were to really let my Nietzschean side enter this discourse, if I were to accept with Seneca and Schopenhauer my stoicism, it's over. We've already lost it. Obama could do anything he wants. The federal government could do anything they want. They could come into my home right now, and the only thing I'll have to decide is, do I want to wear orange or black jumpsuits? They can make me disappear off this planet, and Kathy would never know where I am for the rest of my life.
Exactly. We called to put you on, and we couldn't find you anymore.
No, and you know, long ago I used to tell people that if you've got somebody that's political in your community and they disappear and you keep complaining that you can't find them, that's because in the prison system, this is already in place. If there's a person in the prison system that's problematic, they put them on a bus every day and they move them to a different prison. It's sort of like Yasser Arafat said, I never sleep in the same bed twice.
That's right.
Well, that's what they do to you. Now, they've always done that in the prison system for select prison inmates that were problematic, like Eldridge Cleaver in the old days, for instance. But today, it's now enshrined under Supreme Court rulings and federal law. I can disappear without habeas corpus. No one will ever know forever. And in fact, if they wanted to, a drone could hit my house, and there's not a damn thing anybody in this country could do about it.
And they'd say it was an accident or something.
But all Obama has to do is say, I have no comment. He was on the list. Obama meets every Tuesday. It's called Deadly Tuesday, Terrible Tuesday. He meets every Tuesday and decides who to kill. He then commented once, and the press caught him commenting. He said, I never knew I would be so good at killing.
Unbelievable.
This is America, and we've lost it. Now, I'm not saying there's not something we can still do. We still have somewhat of a functioning democracy. But if you understand what this new study has outlined and what the Swiss study outlined on a global scale, you have to face that we're not going to fix this by voting Democrat or Republican.
No, we have a democracy, Craig, based on what they want us to have.
And what they want us to hear, see, watch. Like I said, it's being debated right now. In every area that matters, we now have only five banks in banking. We have two corporations that control airline production. In the defense industry, the auto industry, it's ever shrinking. In the media, it was six just a month ago. Well, if it goes through the Comcast and Time Warner merge, it'll be five major corporations. And then I read an article, which I was astounded, what was over, I think it was at Slate, they were complaining at the decline of the number of journalistic investigative reporters. And I'm like, what are you talking about, the decline of reporters? They're eliminating journalism systematically.
The investigative reporters are going by the wayside.
If it wasn't for Snowden, would Glenn Greenwald even be a name?
Of course not. Of course not.
So
I was in Los Angeles a month ago, as I am quite often. And I was talking to a Chinese couple. They were here from China. They were just vacationing. And they love America. They're having a great time. And they, I asked them, what's it like living in a communist country? Look at what we're doing and look at what they do in China. They said, and this is interesting, that most of the people in China don't even realize that they're in a communist state. They have their little jobs, and they do what they're doing, and they think they're beginning to become prosperous, and they seem to be happy. And they said, look, you know, we wanted to come to the United States. We applied for our visa. Here we are. And they don't realize that this small group of 75 people in China are running the whole show, and I think that's what they're going to try to do with us.
I believe they have successfully done that. I think it's already at that stage. When I used to give a lecture in, say, Los Angeles, I would do seven radio shows. We would announce on each show that I'll be at the Sheraton on a weekend. And sometimes 1,000 people would show up. Two nights in a row, 2,000 people would show up. But you know what we started noticing after about a decade? They're all the same people.
Same people show up.
And the same people show up at Bo Greitz's lecture, Bob Woodward's lecture, Philip Agee's lecture. They're all the same people. And pretty soon it got so crowded that people would leave Bob Woodward's lecture and come to mine. And people would stay at mine until the last hour and then go over to Bob Woodward's.
So the big thing will become, and we'll get back to calls here in a second, Craig, is how much pressure do we take before we say we can't handle it anymore? Enough is enough. Or do they know that, you know, they'll get what they want out of this, the control, the manipulation, and everything else, And then the rest they'll throw to us as crumbs. And as long as we have the little crumbs, like a little mouse would have in a house, he's happy.
If 21% of young men have already given up and they live at home with their mother and they don't have a job and they don't date, they don't want a wife, they don't want a family, they don't want a home, they don't even care if they have a decent car any longer. They're perfectly content to live at home with their mother and sit in front of video games and pornography. We're already on that treadmill. And once you're on it, once a sufficient number are on it, like the Chinese, there is no getting off of it. The Internet, you know, everybody believed the Internet was going to be democratic, that the Internet was going to set us free, that there would be this surge of libertarianism. You know, I knew that that was false from the very beginning, and an author at Yale wrote a book on the subject saying, no, what will happen is General Electric, pornography, Walmart, Amazon.com, that's what's going to dominate it. And the six major entertainment and industry media outfits, they'll decide what's the subject matter on the Internet. Because in the end, it has to come from the people themselves. It has to come from their heart and soul. They have to say, I want to be free. Each of us individually. Otherwise, there is no we. There is no us in the United States, the U.S. There is no us. We're not. You and I are talking because it's George and Craig. Now, how many are listening that haven't turned this off, that don't want to hear bad news? You know, as a Nietzschean, Friedrich Nietzsche says, you need bad news. You need bad news.
You can't run from it.
You need to think of death every day so you'll understand what it is you hold in your life at this moment.
Well said. Let's go to North Hollywood, California. Hi, Frank. Go ahead.
Hi. I agree with your host 100%. It's over. I am in shock. I feel like that America is in a state of like a movie, like the invasion of the body snatchers. This legalizing marijuana, there's a gigantic problem. I know for a fact in the high schools in North Hollywood, Campbell Hall, Harvard Westlake, you name it, gigantic problems. So legalizing this and making it recreational use, okay, do you think we're going to have more people smoking marijuana or less? Of course you're going to have more. Will we have more car accidents or less? You're going to have more. I can't believe that people are in an outrage with this legalization of this stuff. It is so easy to get now, and it's very potent. There are kids who can get it from their aunts, from their uncles, from their grandmothers. It's amazing, and I just cannot believe how America is just going down the drain. And you're right. I'm 67. I am never going to see a Republican president again in this country. You've got more people with their hand out, and they're getting what they want. The schools, every teacher in the school is a liberal. If you see a Republican teacher, you're not getting hired.
It's believe it, Frank, it's not just that. You're going to get Republican presidents elected, too, in the future. There's no doubt. You might get that in the next 2016 election, but they're all the same. Back with more with Craig Hewlett in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Next hour, of course, we're talking about communing with the divine. We're talking angels. Should be fascinating, but we're going to come back and take some final phone calls with Craig Hewlett on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We've got more calls than time, so let's go right to the phones. Carlos and Carson, California. Thanks for holding, Carlos. Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, George and Greg. Greg, you know, the oligarchy was in control of the propagation of the drug trade way back in the late 1700s when the Rothschilds and the British royalty and the Russells, who created the Skulls and Bones, were using the British East India Company to send opium disguised as tea to India and China. And, of course, the same oligarchy is still in control today through George Soros, who's an agent for the Rothschilds, who George Soros is financing some of the agencies that are now promoting the legalization of marijuana. And they're using very prominent citizens like ex-President Fox of Mexico and ex-President Cedillo from Mexico to lead some of these agencies. And, of course, what that's going to do, once they legalize marijuana, they're going to go on to legalize cocaine heroin, and you're going to have a much larger, greater percentage of people hooked up on dope. And you know, it's going to be, of course, the intent is to have a zombie generation of people who won't care when they're led into the gas chambers and the guillotines, which are already, already, from what I understand, already in use, or not in use, but they're waiting out there. So, you know, that tells where we're headed. These people, like you said, don't care about the subservient people like us. We're the slaves, and we're to be decimated. And that's the ultimate objective.
Let's get your reaction to that, Craig. It's much like some of the things we've been talking about tonight.
Well, you know, he may be putting some carts before horses, but he is correct, Soros. The founders of Facebook, Google, or some of the wealthiest billionaires in the nation are behind the organizations that are promoting the legalization of marijuana and the referendums. And they're putting millions, hundreds of millions of dollars into it. Now Soros will tell you, in his book at least, he argued that we need to stop the criminalization because arresting young people for marijuana isn't the answer. We should take that money that we save from incarceration and put that into treatment centers. Okay, Soros is smarter than that. Nobody's going to take any money that isn't there through the incarceration process being eliminated. They're going to take any money and put it in any treatment centers anywhere, unless Soros builds the treatment centers and they're induced into going into the treatment centers, where Soros would then make money. But let's cut it to the chase, okay? We don't need to go back to the Brits. We have a heroin epidemic in the United States of America that's only surfaced in the last 5 years. The Taliban had completely wiped out heroin production by the year 2000.
The poppy seeds were gone.
They were gone. They were even given an award by the United Nations Narcotics Agency for having done that as one of the greatest accomplishments the UN had ever witnessed. Now it's the major producer. It's now record numbers. And guess who's guarding the poppy fields? I have over 100 photographs in a file that have been sent to me from Afghanistan. Some of the people are clients, brothers, cousins, etc. Photographs of them guarding the poppy fields. All of them have big grins on their faces. Jeez. And they're saying, it's the greatest duty in Afghanistan. We're protecting the opium fields for the Taliban or the Karzai friendlies. But the one thing great about it, we're not going to get hit with IEDs.
Linda in Bloomington, Illinois. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
George, great show. Always
Thank
great.
You, Linda. Thank you.
Every night. Can't go to bed until I hear
always,
you.
Always different, but we love them all.
Oh, God, I love shows. But anyhow, I want to know, I have a question now. Since we have all of the American people that are listening to this and are paying attention to all of this, if there is, like, our government decides to declare martial law or send the police or any other military or anything against us, if we end up in a war like they had out there in Nevada, are the military and the police and all of them, are they going to, knowing full well that they're going to be on the chopping block just as we are, but will they shoot at us or try to kill us off, you know, because they were ordered to do so, or will they band with the people that don't want any of this? Will they go with us or go against us?
Well, I'm afraid to have
question.
To report. I've already asked that question, you know.
That is a good question.
That I've worked on and off over the last 30 years with federal law enforcement. First the DEA, Secret Service for a short time, ATF, and the Justice Department Homeland Security. As a consultant, I have still a lot of friends that are active duty and some retired. I've asked all of them this question in private. All of them have told me the same thing. What will happen is those who do not want to put on, they laughingly say, those of us that don't want to put on the jackboots and kick America's butt will quit, will resign, will walk away.
Yeah, they will.
But
there won't be that many, though.
But there will not be that many. And all of them also reassured me that the new breed, joining federal, state, and local law enforcement are not the same types of people that joined law enforcement 30 years ago, that joined because of the motto, protect and serve. They're not there for that reason. If they're ordered to kick in doors and step on grandmothers, they'll be more than happy to do it. As far as our military goes, our military is 60% illegal aliens enlisting into the military. And by the way, I'm not against immigration at all. In some cases, without some of these immigrants, we wouldn't have any productivity in certain areas of our economy.
That is very true.
Completely different subject. 60% of all new recruits come from countries other than America. They come here and join. If they didn't join the military to try to become citizens, they would be considered illegal aliens. And these guys, some of them have done 9 tours in war zones in behalf of the United States of America. Now, will they, if they're ordered to round up Americans, will they obey? Yes.
Let us go west. Raul in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, Raul. Thank you.
Hey, how you doing, George? Good show, as always.
Thank you.
I just wanted to comment on the Ukraine situation. You know, it's funny, when I first found out about John Teeter, I kind of just put him off in the back of my head. Never really took it seriously. But over the years, things keep popping up, and it just keeps bringing me back to John Teeter. I wanted to talk about the whole Russian thing. And I got here something that was asked to John Teeter. They said, I think Russia is still very likely to attack the United States with nuclear weapons. It's hard to imagine being here to see it. And John Teeter basically says, you're also correct, but I want to add a twist to your thinking. Russia's enemy in the United States is not you, the average person. Russia's enemy is the United States government. I think we're at the brink of World War III. I don't really think that there's any way of going back. I think this has been building up with the whole Syria situation, with Libya, when they basically took out Gaddafi without taking into consideration what China and wanted to be done. There's also a part here where basically John Teeter says that everything starts off because of failing United States foreign policy and because of consistency, which is amazing to me, because that's basically what's happening with Obama. His foreign policy is failing, and he's basically not following through on what he says when he puts down a red line here and a red line there. So I just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts about that.
All right. And Craig, let me tell you who John Teeter was. If you don't know, he was a supposed time traveler from the year 2036 who started posting on the Internet years ago. And he outlined some of the things that Raul was just talking about, civil unrest and stuff. And what's so bizarre about all of it is, one, it's uncanny. Whoever this John Teeter was, whether he was somebody from our time zone or the future, he knew what he was talking about. And I interviewed once an attorney in Florida, Larry Haber, who represented the Teeter family from now, this current time period, and they're real. It's bizarre. But those things that he just talked about, they're all coming true, aren't they?
Well, let me say something, okay? First of all, I don't need to be a time traveler to have come to the conclusions I've come to.
No.
If you're willing to give up your personal and future economic life in what you had originally chosen to do and devote your entire life to doing this work that I do, I get paid to do this. Okay, I actually earn a living doing this. If I'm not right, I have no clients. I don't have the luxury of being wrong. But it is boring, depressing, cynical. It almost creates angst. I mean, if I don't sleep at night, there's good reason, okay? I don't think anybody's listening. But, you know, are we going to go to, is Third World War guaranteed? Is it U.S. foreign policy? See, the language there, I have a problem with. There is no U.S. foreign policy. Noam Chomsky's wrong that there's an American empire that's in decline. There is no American foreign policy. There is no America or American sovereignty left. There hasn't been for decades. We're not waiting for the New World Order or a one world government. It's here. It just doesn't look like what you think it would look like. So regardless of what anybody predicted in the past, the language is going to be inescapably in error. The global regime of economic interdependence is here. It's money, it's power, it's the production of the things that matter to the global elite. They have no sovereign nation state they care about. There is no foreign policy being emanated from the White House or Obama. Obama is not even the president of the United States any more than Jeb Bush will be when he's elected. This is all great theater. It's wonderful theater. And if you want to remain a Republican and a Democrat, you could have a really good time doing it. There's still champagne and electoral victories. You can have sex and drugs and party your brains out. But I'm telling you, you're not even living in the reality that I'm living in.
You know, part of this, Craig, I think that, you know, maybe the best way is to protect your family, keep your health, have some fun, enjoy your life. We're not on this planet for a very long time, and just move on. Sometimes I think
every day, along with what Montaigne said, I think about death, my death. I tell my clients, pay attention. I'm not going to be here tomorrow. One day that's going to be utterly true.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will. You know, I just had 6 or 7 coast-to-coast guests over the last 8 months. They died, and they were great, solid guests. They died, and, you know, one day I'm going to be saying that about you, or you're going to be saying that about me. It's inescapable.
And there's a reason for it. Why Schopenhauer, Montaigne, Seneca, Nietzsche, why I wrote 2 books on Nietzsche and poetry and music to Nietzsche's my poetry based on Nietzsche's work. There's a reason for this. It's not that I'm a gloomy person. That's what Oliver Stone said about my work. It's a very gloomy presence, Craig. That's a term they use to describe Nietzsche. You're so wrong. I spend my days with hummingbirds, 7 chows, 6 cats, and I live in paradise. My bills are paid. I'm out of debt. I own my own property. I own the vehicles I drive. I don't know what the rest of you have been doing, but I have looked at this country and realized early on, 30 years ago, I'm on my own out here. I've chosen to do this in the public arena because I have the skill sets to still earn a good living doing it, and I would rather do this than any other thing to earn a living, to try to help my country and you, the listener, understand what is taking place around you. Because in a very short amount of time, 3 to 5 years, you're not going to recognize this country. And the people in power are going to stop pretending it's democratic.
What will they do when I continue these kinds of broadcasts, Craig, 5 years from now, because I plan to? What will they try to do?
Well, you know, that's a rough one because, you know, if you and I were to start having significant impact, the way, say, Ross Perot had impact in pretending he was going to create a third party, that's mm-hmm. a myth, by the way, to Ralph Nader's belief system. Ross Perot never intended to really run for president or create a third party legitimately. He never intended that. He just wanted to hurt Bush because of an old Texas fight. That's why he bailed out.
You're right.
Nader's
and he,
looking
and
in the
he
wrong
did.
Direction.
He did. He did it brilliantly, didn't he?
And it was ugly what he did. He just wanted to hurt Bush Sr. because yeah. Bush Sr. threw his butt out of the Reagan White House.
And he didn't care what it cost to do it.
And it, you don't anger a Texas billionaire is the lesson. But the bottom line is nobody's going to come and save us. And one day, all of you listening, whether you believe me or not, I don't care how you come to the truth. Nietzsche said some people can only find the truth through cynicism. If that's it, so be it. But you've got to shed your bigotry and your narrow-mindedness and stop believing the Republicans are going to save you or the Democrats are going to save you or now Nader. Billionaires are going to save us, for heaven's sakes. The truth is, nobody's coming to your rescue. America as America is over. It's finished. All I'm waiting for now is them to let the mask drop.
God, Craig, I'm ready to jump off a bridge.
Well, when they drop the mask, and you'll see what's in the White House one day, when they drop the mask and they stop pretending it's democracy, they stop pretending we have liberty and freedom and the Constitution. When that mask slips, you're going to see it. And when you see it, believe me, you folks have never seen evil.
Did you ever think you'd be thinking this here.
No. No, I told Kathy when I started doing this 40 years ago, I told her, I'm going to do this. I will never stop until I die, because what's more important than truth?
Let's go to Charles in Baltimore, squeeze a call or two in. Go ahead, Charles.
Yes, I appreciate you letting me on.
Sure.
I think it's even worse than what you say it is. And I'll tell you why. This is a different direction, but it is true. Okay. For example, there was a demonstration about a blind person who was denied his rights today. How many people saw it? Well, the media wouldn't cover it. For one thing, in my view, during the 60s, the civil rights movement controlled the media, because whenever there were demonstrations and whenever there were issues, you know, the media was there. But for us, like the blind, for example, because we are so small, and we really are, you know, the media just doesn't have the interest. For example, you know, who cares that a blind person in college can't, you know, the colleges won't allow him to use or won't pay for his equipment, the special equipment that he needs. Who cares, for example, a person like myself made less than the minimum wage working at a workshop that these companies got it done for free, next to nothing, because a law was a lie that said blind people are not, or people like blind people are not capable of being productive when we really are. I could tell you a whole story how productive I was, how I was able to make the minimum wage. It was one of the, you know, you shouldn't have to work that hard on piecework like that.
All right, we are almost out of time. Craig, go ahead.
A nation is judged by how it treats the least of its citizens, the weakest, the poorest. That's always been true. And I'll repeat, you haven't seen the side of our nation state's governing people, the oligarchy that we're now having to admit exists. You haven't seen the side to them that I have. And until that happens, we're not going to wake up.
Craig Hewlett, our guest, website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back.